I promise I will try to like gear down my nerdiness and my fangirling.
No, you're
I'm gonna try
fine.
to bring it down. Okay.
Welcome to the Romantasy Library.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Romantasy Library. I'm your host, Kate Perkins, and today, you guys, I can't even. Today, I'm interviewing internationally best-selling epic fantasy romance author Sarah A. Parker. Okay, she has written to lead a Crystal Bloom series and my favorite, all-time favorite book, When the Moon Hatched. And I know, Sarah, by the way, I was going through your Instagram. You've written other books, too, that I did not know about. So
I have.
Right?
Yes, yes I have. Under a different pen name, yeah. That was my starting series.
Amazing.
But it's so wonderful to be here. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me. And I can't wait to have a chat today.
Yeah. How are you this? Well, it's morning where you're at right now.
It is.
And it is evening where I am. So
just dropped the kids off at school. So I'm good. It's raining heavily here for the first time in months. And so it's lovely. I love this sort of weather and working on book two at the moment, and so it's which is The Ballad of Falling Dragons, and so it's so lovely to it's good for me to take a little break and a breather to be here and to be talking with you today. So good for my hyperfixation, you know. Remind me that I'm human.
I can only imagine what that would feel like writing these books that you have written, because they are so complex. You have to be so immersed in the story. I would have to, I mean, I could imagine, in order to write what you have written, but.
No, 100%. I have to completely cut myself off from the rest of the world. So I go through this stage when I'm, especially when I'm doing my first draft, where I sort of turn into very much a hermit, and I become terrible at communication, and I stop reading as well, other things, because I just have to stay in my characters' heads. And I mean, when I worked on Snappers of Silver Stem, which is the second book in my Crystal Bloom series, I didn't leave the house for 3 months straight. Literally, I was working on like 17 hours straight. You know, I was sleeping on the couch. My husband would just come out of the bedroom, you know, go and get me refreshments, and then off he'd go to work. And then his mum would come in and look after the kids and stuff. And I was just a blob on the couch for 3 months straight. Yeah. I remember leaving the house after I finished and uploaded 2 days afterwards because I needed some rest. And I just felt like an alien. I felt like I just didn't understand the world anymore. It was really, very strange. So, yeah, I definitely bunker myself down when I'm writing these stories.
That is incredible. And having the support, I mean, it sounds like you have a very supportive family to be able to do that. And
yeah.
Take the time to hunker down and be in your worlds, which I wouldn't mind living in your worlds. So take me with you. I would love that. And you said earlier that your kiddos are at school right now. How old are your kids?
Yeah, so William's 10. He turns 11 soon. Indiana is 9, yes. And Arabella is 7. She turns 8 soon. So they're very close in age. She's 18 months between each of them. It was wild there for a while, as you can imagine.
I can't. So my husband has 2 kiddos from a previous marriage, and we have them full time. So we have an almost 18-year-old, a 13-year-old, and then we've got our kiddo, and she's 3.5. So I can't imagine having kiddos that close in age. Were you writing during that time?
I was working on a kid's clothing business and my own little sort of home business. And so I was doing that. So I was sewing. I'm always busy with something. But I was sewing, you know, at that stage about 17 hours a day, and breastfeeding as well at the same time while I was sewing. It was quite wild. But then when my youngest was about 10 months old, I sort of said to my husband, look, I was at this sort of strange point where my designs were getting ripped off and sold on Alibaba and stuff. And same, even with my design pictures and everything, they were all being, and pictures of my kids, like, you know, outfitting my clothes. And so it was like, either I, you know, sort of go abroad and get these made at a more reasonable price so I can battle with these, you know, being ripped off and sold at a much cheaper price, or I pivot. And I'd always had these stories in my head. And I sort of said to my husband, look, I'm going to start writing. And if no one wants to read my stories by the time while our kids are in school, then I will pivot again. And now Arabella's 7, our youngest is 7. So pretty cool.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Praise the Lord that you found writing, because these are my favorite stories. Oh, that's so awesome. How does that feel, like, hearing people say that? I know I'm not the only one who bonds over
I don't think
your
it'll
stories.
Ever settle in. I don't think I'll ever actually fully absorb it, you know, because it's just it feels literally my wildest dreams come true. So it's just to know that people are interested in what I have to say is mm-hmm. just incredible, you know, incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm incredibly honored. And I don't think it'll ever sink in. I don't think it will. I think it'll always just feel like a dream. So
That makes me want to tear up, and I have goosebumps. And I love talking with people too, not just authors, but like talking with folks who are living their dreams. I think it's so inspirational, and I can't wait to dive more into how you have become a writer. And earlier you were saying that these stories have lived in your head. So like, have you always written, or how did all this come to pass? Because you were doing clothing for kiddos?
Yeah, well, so where the fashion design sort of came from, I was writing before I was clothing designing. When I was about sort of 16, 17, I got heavily into fashion design, and it became sort of my hub fixation, I guess. And I discovered this lust for creating things, you know, with my hands. And and I won New Zealand Young Designer of the Year in 2007. They sent me over to Milan on a design scholarship.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so it was quite awesome. I've done sort of big sort of artsy sort of things, like World of Durable Arts and stuff as well over there, for anybody in New Zealand who knows what that is. But yeah, I guess that's also sort of part of my roots is clothing design. My nanny used to draw little people and little dolls, and she used to draw clothes for them for me. So I think she should have been a fashion designer. Yeah. Were she like sort of born at a later time in her life, I think she would have just, yeah. But when regards to writing, so I have been writing since I was very little. I won a writing competition when I was about 7, believe it or not. This little story that I wrote, but it's quite funny as well. I went back to New Zealand recently, and my mum pulled out a box of all the stories that I'd written her over the years. And it's like, I'm the same in so many ways now as I was back then. These quirky little stories, and like they'd have you guessing all the way through, and then you wouldn't realize until, like, for instance, at the end that this person that has been narrating the story was actually a chicken. Some of them are really dark, actually, as well. I was reading this one about this princess, and it was very dark for somebody so young.
What happened? You started to share what happened.
Well, no, I'm not. It's just, it was a very sad story. Nobody ended up alive at the end. I love happy endings now, so don't worry. I think one of them, I've left her on a cliffhanger for the past, like, you know, for since I was like 8. So still me.
I mean, let's be real, you were queen of the cliffies.
I feel like with Moon, though, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's not quite as bad as, like, I guess, say, some of the others from my Crystal Bloom series.
When I found your series, I think I stumbled on, I don't even remember how I found out about When the Moon Hatched. I think like maybe in December I saw that it was releasing, and was it January or February?
January.
Yeah. 13th, and I was like, okay, this looks really interesting. Maybe Jennifer Armentrout posted about it. I don't even know. Maybe. But anyway, I read it and I fell in love. And then I was like, okay, I have to read other stories by this author. And thank goodness, though, to Bleed the Crystal Bloom. And by the way, for folks on YouTube, you can see the covers. Absolutely stunning. But yeah, thank goodness there were already three of these bad boys out. So like, yes. I didn't have to wait.
Yeah, it's good you got onto them when you did too, because those who were left hanging on book two's cliffhanger for like a year, I felt so wise about 8 months. I felt so bad. It was a brutal one.
But you know, the drama of these books, you know, and it sounds like even as a child, you've had all the feels too. And you're able to incorporate that into your stories because I mean, the emotional depth of these stories really, I mean, I feel all of the feels when I'm reading your books. So
anyway. I feel all of them when I'm writing them. I'm shocking, actually. I always like try to tuck myself away into a corner because otherwise my husband, he works right next to me and he's sitting there watching me cry. I'm like a real private crier. So I'm
snots like coming down your nose, and you're like,
yeah, no, I'm like, don't look at me.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have those moments when you wrote When the Moon Hatched?
I had a lot of those moments with Moon. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
My gosh.
I think the, because I took a break sort of about, I think we're on the plains and round about that part of the story when I decided, okay, I need to write, get all these diary entries down now. So I spent about a week and a half or so writing all the diary entries. And I swear, I was just crying by the end of that week, I was so emotionally exhausted that I just didn't even recognize myself. I was just empty. So, but yeah, and especially that last scene, the very last scene in the book, the very last paragraph, I guess, and the last word, I finished that and then I went and stood and cried in the shower for like, I don't know, a long, very long time. And then every time I would do my read-throughs and get to that same part, I would do the same because it just wrecked me. So, and I have cried a lot while writing the second book too. So buckle up.
Oh my gosh. I am buckled and I'm ready for the ride. I know it's going to be bumpy and it's going to be up and down, but
lots of ups, lots of downs.
Lots and of those ups. Journal entries that you're referencing in When the Moon Hatched, gosh, I don't want to give any spoilers, but some of those were just so tender.
Yeah.
And like with some of the family relational dynamics too.
I'd actually pre-shaped all that lore and all the history and everything beforehand. I spent a month sort of just getting everything down onto a document before I even sat down to write the first chapter. So then I didn't look at that, but I knew all that was, I knew everything then. So I was like, okay, that's it. I've got it there. There's my, like, I don't know, it's 35 or 40,000 words or something, word document with everything in it. And so when I was like, those diary entries were just, I knew that I had to get this other timeline out and I had to do it in a way that, you know, we felt like we were there. And so actually getting those out, it was like almost releasing it out of me. And I kind of almost felt like somebody else was writing them through me. It was
wild.
Probably one of my favorite
parts. What a wild experience.
Writing that story.
Have you felt that way before? Like that piece of someone else kind of writing through you? That's really interesting.
I felt that way, honestly, kind of with the entire book, with this one. It's huge, right? It's 170, I don't know, 2,000 words or something. And she's big. And I wrote that first draft in 6 weeks. And yeah. So it just poured out of me.
Poured. And I was about to say, it sounds like it poured out of you.
I've never written a book that fast before. It was so strange, and it wasn't hard either. I mean, I guess with the Crystal Bloom series, it's quite I've really got to battle those books out because I'm digging into a part of me that's quite hard to bring up. So I think with those, Steam, for instance, took me, I think, 13 months. And I was still a pinch to the end. Like I barely got that uploaded in time. Whereas Moon, it was like I was working, you know, during the school hours basically, and then after school I'd be going to take dog for a walk. I'd be cooking dinner. I'd be relaxing in the evening, watching a show. Like it was so relaxed, and it just felt like again, it was just being written through me. It was really quite incredible. So just a lovely, beautiful, I guess, birthing experience.
Yeah. How do you make sense of that, that one series feels like you have to dig really deep to a part of you that's difficult to bring up versus When the Moon Hatched, where it sounds like it was a lot more relaxed and it poured through you? Like, how do you make sense of that? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't try to, I guess. I think sometimes I think a story just is like, it's there. It's right there. It's sometimes they just, you know, it's the same with chapters. Like, some chapters are harder than others. Some chapters just, you know, come out so easily. So I just know that with Moon, there was definitely the right time for me to be writing that story, you know. And I think it is also the same reason why I took a little breath from Bloom and wrote Moon, because I knew that especially that part of the story, book two plus book three, which was originally supposed to be one book, I knew that I had to split it. So I knew that part of the story had been a hard yakka, you know. It was emotional, it was intense to get through, and I knew that I kind of just needed to take a breath, because you know, when you dig so deep, it's like you've got to replenish that. So I knew I just needed to take a breath, and Moon was my breath, and what a beautiful breath it was. So
it is a beautiful breath. Can I ask, what about To Bleed a Crystal Bloom series felt like you had to dig really deep? Was it the subject matter? Like, what about it?
Yeah. For those who have read it, it's a lot of dark stuff that we're dealing with. You know, Orlaith herself is very damaged. She's dealing with a lot of, a lot of hurt inside, and you know, she doesn't sort of understand who she is, and she's really cloistered herself off as well. So, you know, she's a very unreliable narrator all the way through the story. So there's also that I'm contending with, you know, knowing that we're seeing the story through this character's eyes, but there's a whole bunch more that meets the eye. But yeah, it's just, she's got a lot of really deep wounds. And when writing, I especially when going through a trauma that a character's got, I don't ever map out a path. I'm not like, okay, she's going to be over this by then, over that by then, over that by then, and then we're going to be great and we're going to be dandy. That's not what real life is like. I sit with my character. I look at those pains and those scars, and we work through it together at the pace of the character. And I would never skip over a difficult chunk, because that's not real life. You know, that is not that, and that was not, that is not, that's not real. So I go through all of that with these characters. I'm in whatever way that they deal with things, and Orlaith, the way that she deals with things, it's hard. It's emotionally draining to get to move, you know, to be shifting through these pains and you know, slowly blooming like she is. So I think it's just because I refuse to skim the surface of these emotional the emotional traumas and stuff there, and physical traumas that these characters have been through. I nut through it with them, and I feel like I go through it too, and it's hard sometimes, but I love it. And I'm also so interested in psychology and stuff. So for me, it's very, very, you know, I love working through. Yes. Yeah. But you know, I refuse to skip anything.
No. And you can definitely pick up on that as you're reading. I think that also helps make the story just so compelling, and these characters feel real. And I think in both of these series, like I said, felt all the feels and the tears. And I even remember my husband being like, okay, this is not real. But it feels, I mean, again, that emotional depth that you write with, and how these characters, you know, they really go through some very intense traumas, and how they heal. It sounds like you want to work with the character to like wrestle with some of those traumas and get on the other side. And I'm a therapist, and so I think that's another reason why I appreciate your book so much, because you don't shy away from that. You are you face it and you incorporate it. And I think that's also, again, like what I said earlier, why it helps make your stories feel so compelling, you know? And it's beautiful. But to bleed a crystal bloom, yeah, or a lathe, I'm like, oh gosh, there were some times where I'm like, girl, you are numbing out.
Right? Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm like, oh. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's yeah. And I think especially by the end of book three, you know, we're at a much better stage. In her, I guess, emotional growth and just in her and just yes. in general. And so I'm just like the rest of the story is like the stuff that I've been most excited about writing in this series. So I'm just really excited to get there and to, you know, share the rest of her story with the world. I think, you know, I'm just, yeah, it's going to be a fantastic journey. So.
And the character arcs in these stories are fantastic. So when, I know right now you're working on book two for When the Moon yes. Hatched, do you have a tentative idea or, I don't know, to Bleed a Crystal Bloom when you're going to be working on the fourth novel? Fourth
so book? I've done some work on it already, but I need to get the first draft of Moonfall 2 to my publishers quite early because that's now Trad Pub, so it's sort of a different process. You've got to get them, you know, mm-hmm. to them quite early. So, but that means that I, with Crystal Bloom, I had to kind of tuck that to the side a little bit and just so I can get to the end of this draft and then move on to that, and it will publish before Moonfall 2. So because it's indie published, so as soon as I'm done, it's good to go. Whereas as soon as I'm done with Moonfall 2, which will probably be by the end of the year, we've still got another, you know, 11 or so months right. to go until it'll be so
that is so wild. Yeah, the differences between indie publishing and traditional. So congratulations being Trad Pub. How does that feel?
Oh, wild, wild, incredibly out of this world. I mean, I'm still pinching myself. And I feel so lucky because I've got such an amazing team with both my publishers in the US and the UK Commonwealth. And US, Canada, and UK Commonwealth. I just feel so honoured because it's the teams are just, they've got the same vision as I do. They've got the same lust for the story, and I just know that, you know, that it's kind of, I've just duplicated myself here. You know what I mean? And we're all just got the same mindset moving forward. So it's really cool. And I'm so honoured that, you know, there's been, I guess, that I'm getting that the story has gotten that same love, has drawn that same love and passion from other people. So yeah, very cool.
Hey guys, and now time for another ad. Welcome to Callie and Maddie Designs, where fantasy meets fashion. Callie is the owner and designer, creating wearable merch inspired by our favorite fantasy books and beloved authors like Sarah J. Maas, K.A. Tucker, Penn Cole, who has been featured on this podcast. I'm so excited about that. Sarah A. Parker, who will also be on this podcast. I cannot wait. And Kara Douglas, and so many more. Every design is officially licensed by the authors, and Callie even works directly with them on designs for officially licensed designs, which I think is a really big deal. All of Callie's designs come from a pure book loving mind, as she only designs for books that she feels passionately about. Guys, her designs are so cute. I have a couple shirts coming in for the Fate and Flame series by K.A. Tucker. I cannot wait. And I also have a Sarah A. Parker shirt coming in, which I cannot wait to wear and show off. If you guys are interested in checking out her website, you can use my code ROMANTICY10 to purchase something for 10% off, whatever you like. All of her designs are super cute. I highly recommend. It's Callie and Maddie Designs. She's on Instagram, and you can find all of her info there. Thanks, guys. And now back to the show.
Could you share some of your publishing process? And then how the traditional publishing came about for you?
Yeah, sure. So so typically with my Crystal Bloom books, you know, I'll bash out a first draft and then nobody sees that. That's rough as guts. Back a step. Usually I'll get down all my dialogue and all my cues. So I visualize the entire story. I'll do it a couple of times before I put down, you know, so that's my shape. And it's literally just dialogue and scene cues. So I'm a big planner. I don't pants. I plan. I plan right down to the, it's down to the,
No, you're not wanting to miss any of those details. And then especially with feel like the emotional depth too that these characters go through with all the trauma, I'm sure it's also like wanting to make sure that you're doing those characters justice and getting all of it. Anyway, yeah. I can imagine how the plotting could help with all of that.
Well, I think also when you've got a basic sketch there as well, you can look at it and go, okay, well, hang on, that's, you know, you look at it as a broad and go, oh, no, that's not going to be hitting that further down the line. You know what I mean? So I like to just, it's a preparation. Preparation for me is key, you know. And so it just helps me when I'm trying to juggle so much, getting so much, you know, I guess as well, Easter eggs and stuff throughout the story. It allows me to really, you know, dig deep. So, yeah, I sketch out that plan and then I go through, I do a first draft, very rough. And then I go through, I do a second draft and then I start feeding it to my alpha readers. They will give me feedback. At that stage, I'm very open to huge rewrites. So we'll see how it goes. And then I might have to rewrite big, huge chapters and big, huge chunks of the book and that's fine. Go through that. Then I start feeding those. Then as I read back through, after the big changes, I feed that through into a better document. And then I've got a team of better readers who read at a more, I guess, at a sort of, you know, not so changing big things scale, but in saying that I also have had big changes at that stage too, which is fine. We battle that bridge when we come to it. And then after I've gone through their changes, I do my own another big sweep, make sure I'm completely happy with the story before I pass it on to my editor. And then she does her thing. Sometimes she has more changes and then that's fine. And then we do go through all that and move through, do my own another read through, hopefully if I've got time before the upload time. And then I get it formatted and I format it myself generally. And apart from the hardbacks and then upload. So that's indie publishing. So usually I've got a pre-order set, so I've got a date that I have to have it uploaded by. So I'm working to a timer. And that when you are, you know, that can be quite daunting for, and I think I speak for all indie authors, that can be, that time ticker for Amazon can be quite daunting because you know that if you do not hit that, then you lose all your pre-orders and you also lose your pre-order rights for a certain amount of time. So you can't put a pre-order up for another, I think, year or something. And you get one chance to push it back. And I did that with STEM and then I didn't have any more chances. So I had to meet that date. That time. I think I uploaded it with 30 seconds to spare. So it's tense. Even for somebody who plans, it's tense. Yeah. That's indie. Wow. With Flame, I was a bit more organized. I had it ready for probably about 24 hours beforehand. But then with Moon, I said to myself and to my close people, I said, I'm not doing a pre-order. I am writing the story. I'm giving myself the time to love the story as much as I possibly can. I'm taking a breath. And I didn't tell anyone I was writing it. I just, apart from obviously those people that, you know, my alpha team, my beta team. And I just enjoyed the process. I didn't tell anyone that it was coming until it was with its second round of edits. I got two editors with it and it was at that stage, but then I told them, and at that stage it was almost ready for me to send out physical arcs, which I've never done with any of my books before. I had time to actually run a proper campaign, almost similar to, but more tight than I guess a traditional publisher would provide. So when it did release on the 13th of January, it had already gone out to a few hundred ARC readers and stuff. So it already had some traction. So that was really cool. And then I guess at the moment it sort of hit, it shot up to the top of the Amazon charts. And then the next day my agent was in touch with me like, Sarah, you know, we need to talk because we had publishing houses that were emailing us and stuff. So we went through that process and, you know, found the perfect publishing houses for in the UK, Commonwealth and the US, Canada. And now it's incredible. So obviously we went really, really fast. So obviously I'd already had it up. So we kept it up digitally, even with the transition. But before anyone knew that I was going trad with it, we'd worked from that date that, you know, we handed it over, we'd worked hard to make sure that there was only going to be a small amount of downtime where people couldn't get the paper back, in the US at least. And so we just Absolutely.
I got the paperback.
Charged. Did you? Uh-huh. It's thick, isn't it? She's thick. Yes. Oh, that's the indie one. Nice.
Oh, okay. I guess it is the indie one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not available anymore. That's an indie version. That was one of the ones that I pushed out on the 13th of January. Yeah.
Yes.
Very cool.
I read it so fast on my Kindle I put an order in, I think it was through Barnes & Noble maybe. Or maybe it was, I don't remember.
Yeah, because they were stocking it. Yeah.
Yes, and I read it before it came in paperback. So I'm like, well, whatever. I have it on my shelf.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so no, cool. that's the one that that's the indie version. So very cool. Yeah, I love it. So we obviously that was very, very fast. So it was only a very small amount of downtime, and before it went back up again. So. Which is so cool. And then obviously with the second book, I'll get the draft in hopefully October and August, September, October. Yes, hopefully October. And they'll do a quick sweep on it, tell me any major things, and then we'll do sort of pass backwards and forwards, and hopefully it'll be completely tidied up by sort of March or April, and then we'll be sending out ARCs, and then by October, publish. So. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What a ride. Publishing is such a ride.
It is. Very much so.
When your agent talked to you of, you know, we have publishing houses that are interested, how did that feel? I mean,
wild. Yeah. I mean, when I first published my very first book, I was like, you know, I'm just going to see if anyone likes my stories rather than, you know, push myself in front of publishers and risk that, you know, that disappointment. I just want to see if anyone's interested in my stories, and this is a beautiful way for me to do that. So with my first series that I wrote, I really just had fun with that, you know, and I was just shoving out stories and say, does anyone want to read me? So yeah, it's sort of when I worked on Bloom.
I want to read you.
Oh, yay. but yeah, so when it came to Bloom, I was like, when I wrote Crystal Bloom, I was like, okay, I'd found my voice by that stage, I think, especially with the fourth book of my previous series. I really kind of found my sway, and I was like, okay, I want to be writing romantasy. And so I knew, you know, that was where my home was. And so, yeah, it was, you know, even so though, I never sort of anticipated that, you know, that, I don't know, this is literally a dream come true. So it was, I've never been sort of putting out books with the idea of, okay, I want to attract a publishing house, you know, but so when that happened, it was like, oh my gosh, okay. Oh, wow. Oh,
this just happened.
Oh, wow. Yes. They want me. So yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you're so talented. I mean, truly, Sarah, you are my favorite author. Favorite author ever.
Oh, so, thank you, my heart.
Yes.
I'm honored.
Yes, and so I know I asked about the traditional like publishing route, right? When you initially went. When the moon hatched, were you nervous at all about things changing? I mean, it's not like when you go traditionally published, you give all control to somebody else, right? Like you still have control.
Oh, absolutely.
Your story.
Yeah. No, okay. It's fantastic. I mean, I can't speak for everybody because obviously I just know my situation, but, you know, I've got a fantastic team with UK and Commonwealth and US, Canada, and I'm very close with them all. You know, we all worked very closely together to get Moon back up again, and there's no pushiness or anything. We're all just working together, and you know, I'm still got the same cover designer working on book two, and you know, I'm still got the same illustrator doing the illustrations in book two. So, and I'm dealing with her for that, and so I was even asked as well, like with the editing process, how do I want to do this. So you know, so obviously they've got to get their eyes on it, but it was asked, you know, what stage do you want to give it to us, are you comfortable? So it's been very I'm so lucky. I've got such fantastic teams. So yeah,
that's amazing. So will you be using the same editor?
Yeah, well, I've got her actually doing a she's alpha reading it at the moment, and then she is going to be reading it at each stage. So she's actually, to be honest, is somewhat more involved than she was previously. Uh-huh. But then it will also go to my US, Canada and UK Commonwealth editors. And because they're both from HarperCollins, they will be working together and they will give me any shared notes. And then mm-hmm. I'll have my editor read over it again afterwards as well. So we're all just, you know, it's Man. Like it takes a village to raise a book, you know. We're yes. all just mushing together. It's great.
Yeah. Man, she's a lucky duck to have access to the fact that she's like editing right now.
She's the only one in the Alpha Doc, so she's the only one that's read it so far.
Yeah, I wonder what that's like too, because she can't say anything. And you can't probably. I mean, you can't say anything.
She's a wonderful friend of mine as well, so it's lovely.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Very yeah. cool. I'm so excited. I'm going to be getting the fairy lute version.
Oh, isn't it beautiful?
It looks stunning. Some people. I've started to see some posts on Instagram. Do you have it there?
Can we? I do actually. Yes. Hang on. Sorry. When I opened this up, like
did you cry?
I was so overwhelmed. So there's the edges. Oh
my gosh.
There's the top.
Sarah, stop.
Bottom. Hang on.
Oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. Fairy loot. Oh, I cannot wait.
And then, hang on.
Yeah. Nothing like Sarah Parker sharing her fairy loot book with the world right now. Well, I don't know, whoever's listening to this. That's gorgeous.
They've got like this ombre effect as well on the front here. That's mm-hmm. what's like purple down here, and then it's blue up here. It's so beautiful. And then
so pretty. Yes.
And then,
gorgeous. So there's foil on the end pages too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm a sucker gorgeous. For foil.
Me too.
Yes.
I've never seen that before either myself. So
it's gorgeous. I haven't either.
They've still got the same sort of formatting throughout and stuff. So, yeah.
Yes. I love all of the details in the art. I mean.
Oh, me too.
It's so stunning. Who did that for you?
Well, it was done through my publisher because they were the one that, you know, they worked with Flip Fairy Loot. So they, for the UK Commonwealth, so there was Harper Voyager. So, but it was obviously I got a say in the art and stuff. So it was all passed to me. I approve everything and whatnot and have my voice on it. But that was Bluey Boo. And the end papers were Art of Frost and Flame.
Okay.
Art of Frost and Flame, I think, yes.
Shout out yeah. right there.
Let me just double check that. Hang on, sorry. Art of Frost and Flame, yes. So Art of Frost and Flame for the end papers and Bluey Boo for everything else.
Gosh, it's so stunning. And when you said that you're not great with names, I mean, your brain is full of stories too, I'm sure. So like,
it's a problem. I've dumped like regular stuff that's probably quite important for like humans. Like it's gone. Like I've to make way for these worlds and for everything they've got in them. Like mm-hmm. I've literally dumped stuff, and it's wild. Like especially since my husband's mm-hmm. been home, like helping with the kids and being the primary caregiver. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday I was at the dance shop, like with my daughter, getting her, you know, some dance stuff, and mm-hmm. the person was like, "Oh, what dance school she's at?" And I was like, I have no idea.
Great question.
That was so embarrassing. Oh my gosh.
My gosh. Sarah, I'm not even an internationally best-selling author, and I still struggle with that too. My husband is so on top of like all of the details and has a fabulous memory. I feel like he's just so type A. I am not.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I feel like there are some brains, right, that are more focused on story and remembering people's stories maybe, or creating stories versus, I don't know, my husband's so detail-oriented. So I feel that, and I'm not even a writer. Well,
yeah, but yeah.
And you said earlier, so we're going to kind of go back, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
That when you were younger, you won that really cool award.
Young Designer of the Year, yeah.
Yes.
Or the writing one.
Uh-huh. Yes, that one.
Yeah.
So you're from New Zealand, is that right?
I am, yes.
Yeah, so born and raised New Zealand.
Born and raised New Zealand on a farm.
On a farm?
Yeah, very, very rich upbringing with farm animals all around me. Just literally, I would leave the house in my gumboots at, you know, at sun up and just wander around all day, come up when the birds were flocking across the sky and the sky was pink, and just quite often with tadpoles in a container or frogs in my pocket or something, and just muddy. And, you know, I was making up stories in the little forest that we had, and just completely in my own world. So my upbringing was very, in my own world. But like with the surrounded by nature as well.
Yeah. And I think nature can be so inspirational for, at least for me.
I love nature. Yeah, me too.
And it can be, it just like touches my soul. We were, last week, we were on vacation to the beach, and it was fabulous. Just being near the water. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so good for the soul. But it sounds like you were raised, in that kind of a world where you got to be in nature and use your imagination and be creative. And that's so cool.
It's very wholesome. Yeah. And our Nana, she lived just across the paddock, because we put a little, granny flat for her on our land. And so I'd wander over there as well. And she would bake together and stuff. And she had this huge stack of fairy books, and I've got them over there now, actually. And she'd have all these fairies and different wooden mushrooms and a dragon and a hatching egg and just a whole bunch of like all sort of fantastical things around. And that was her. And so I'd go there and I'll just be flicking through these fairy books and, you know, being, I guess, immersed in this different world. So that really fed into my imagination, you know. Okay. So when I was wandering the farm, I would be, I'm like hunting for fairies, you know. I'm like trying to find their homes. So, very cool.
Oh, that's very cool. Is that, do you think that kind of helped set you up to land with romanticism?
I think so, I think when my first sort of step into, I guess, fantasy was Aragorn, and I chewed through those books. And at the time, we didn't have a lot of money, so, you know, mum and dad buying me those books was, you know, it's a big thing, and I chewed through them. And you know, it's so that was, you know, me into fantasy, but then my first sort of romanticy was actually Throne of Glass. So I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm romantic, you know, so I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best things just like combined. I love this drama. And my mind just went, and now oh my God, Karen Marie Moaning and her Fever series, just found my home here. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Okay, I'll have to. When did you read Throne of Glass then?
It was on our honeymoon. So hang on, it would have been, it was years ago now. It was before the last book in the series came out. I was hanging on that cliffhanger for quite a while.
Gosh, that is such an epic story. And she apparently, Sarah Mass, I think she was like 16 when she first started writing that first book.
I read that. Yes. It's incredible. Wild. It's so cool.
Wow. Okay. So then on your honeymoon, you read this series, and then it just, I don't know, what compelled you, I guess, to start writing yourself? Because I know you said that you've always kind of been writing, right? But then you were into fashion. So then.
Yeah. Well, after I read that, I just started chewing through books. I just went on a reading binge, and I was like, oh my golly, you know, this whole world opened up for me. And I was reading like 9 books a week, and I wasn't sleeping much.
I was about to say, how did you sleep with that?
I wasn't. All I wanted to do was read. During that time, I think I'm going to give this a go and see if I can write a story and see if I can actually write a story that I'm happy with. And so I think just, you know, giving that a go quietly. And when I first did that, I love not telling anybody about things. I didn't tell anybody. The first story I wrote is still sitting on my computer, and it's probably never going to see the light of day. It's about 400,000 words. I'd say it's actually about three stories, but it's, you know, one big overall story that could be split up, but it will probably never see the light of day. But it's, I use that just to see if I could actually tell a story. And I spent that first year actually just banging out these words before I published anything. So, and then the second story I wrote was actually under my other pen name, so S.A. Parker, and that was A Token's Worth. So it's very dark for anybody, you know, very, 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 very dark. So buckle up for anyone wants to read that. It's yeah, and it's reverse harem. So it's for those that are interested in reverse harem. But I was reading a bit of that at the time and I was like, oh, well, so let's give this a shot. So yeah, but that, I kind of used that series to teach myself how to write, and you know, and it's funny actually because you can see my writing adapt and grow through each of the books, and by the time you get to the fourth book, it's like, oh yeah, that's she's found herself there. So
she's, it's found her voice. There yeah. she is. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like definitely reading To Bleed a Crystal Bloom and obviously When the Moon Hatched, like it's a Sarah Parker book, like your voice yeah. shines through, which is
I think
cool.
It's yeah, especially I think I think like writing Moon, like I've never felt more myself while I was writing than while I was writing that book, you know. I felt just yeah, and it wasn't a resale in any way, shape or form. It just poured out of me. So I know there are reasons that I've struggled with Moon and with Bloom in the past is because I've been battling through those, you know, those traumas and stuff with all life. But so yeah. That's one of the reasons why I can't wait to continue writing your story. And one of the reasons why I took a breath is because I know the next stage in your story, it's going to be a lot easier for me to get out. But I wanted to be the best version of myself before I do that. So
yeah, that makes sense. Took a breath for When the Moon Hatched. And
yeah.
So do you think the fourth book, is it for To Bleed a Crystal Bloom? I know I'm like going back and forth.
You're right.
Is it going to feel a little bit lighter, or can readers still expect it to be some of the, I don't mean, it's your writing.
They will still have that heavy tension and stuff and that, yes. yeah, and that whatnot. Yeah. But there will definitely be emotional themes, but Orlaith's definitely in a much better headspace now. And, you know, and we've gone through some trials and tribulations with her and Rawdon.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But they're now definitely more working through things as a team. So, yeah, so everything's definitely taken on different flavor. I'm excited.
That's really exciting. Okay, I wanted to go back real fast and then we're going to talk more about your books, if that's okay.
Cool. That's good.
Okay, so being in New Zealand, growing up on a farm, super cool, that's amazing. How did you end up getting to Australia then, right? Because that's where you're at right now.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, so yeah. So I moved over here when I was about 19, I think, and okay. I met my husband, you know, I think when I was 20, just about 21. It was after I'd gotten back from Milan for that design scholarship that I went on, and I kind of opened up my mind to the world. And then I think being, you know, taking another step away over here, I think I was dealing with my own things at the time, and I just needed to I guess stretch my wings. But yeah, I guess I found, you know, that ability to stretch my wings over here, and I went through some more hard things, and you know, and then yeah, then met Josh, and here we are. So 14 years later, I'm not sure, I've lost track. But it's, yeah, I think it's, you know, I've always been one to kind of explore on my own, and I think that's part of what that was is, you know, I went off to Milan and did my exploring, and then I wanted to do more exploring and ended up fluttered down here.
That's so interesting, because I feel like not to bring it back to your book, but of course I'm going to, because I love your books, but I feel like Rave, she has like that exploration passion too.
Yes,
I don't know, as a character,
yeah,
I can see that within her.
There's definitely little bits, I think, that I pull from myself into my characters. I try not to go too heavy on any of them, though, that because, you know, I want them to be separate. I want them to be their own people, their own folk, you know. But there is definitely generally something in myself that comes through in my characters. So for Rave, it's something that definitely stands out for me is the way that she deals with her emotions. She stuffs everything down and just pretends it's not there. I'm very typical of doing that. That's me to a T.
Okay.
Stuff it down, pretend it's not there. It's all good.
That's so interesting because these books are so emotional, you know, that like.
But that's the thing, I've got to pull this, and that's the thing with, I guess, life, I've got to dig all that up, you know, so it's kind of like looking everything in the face and it's not always easy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at the worst, most painful parts of you and going, oh, you know, so, but with Rave, it's like, oh, it's all good, just stuff it all down there. Like, great, this is easy.
Yeah, and even like the way that it was described of like how she would push it down below like a frozen lake, you know, and just like keep, and I'm like, girl, stop doing that. As a therapist, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really hurting my heart right now.
Yeah,
she's going through her own emotional journey, so
she is.
I know she is.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I can't wait to see where that goes. Yeah. So what, I know that you've been touching on this, you know, that piece of writing trauma into these stories and how you've had to really dig deep because with Orlaith, like really bringing it up and then that piece with Rave of being able to like, you know, anyway, so how does that feel like really getting into that mindset of trauma? Cause earlier too, you were saying that you're very interested in psychology, which I can see that in these books. So
yeah. I actually studied it for a little while, but I very quickly realized, I think, that I that my creative side was had more power over me. I can't write a two-dimensional character. It just doesn't make sense to me. Even with side characters and stuff, I need to know what makes them tick, you know. And that's how I end up shaping a character. I need to know how they got here, like what I have full backgrounds for characters that, you know, I won't even go into their background for, but just so that I know why they are the way that they are. And so that I, you know, so that I can understand their voice. Like, I can't just sit down and write a character without knowing and let it all work itself out. I plan down to the T. So it's, yeah. And it's the same with this, with, you know, with my folk and my people that I write. It's like, I need to understand how their heads tick. And so I guess that's that side that's coming through in that is, you know, I no character goes unexplored and no mentality goes unexplored. And I really do. I love nutting through that and seeing how, especially how different, I guess, characters, you know, communicate when they've both been through different things or similar things. Like you know, especially with Khan and Rave, like they're so, you know, like she's kind of, you know, she's been gone for a large amount of time without spoilers, whereas he's lived through that time. So, you know, and living through pain and trauma and working your way through that sort of stuff, like that matures you, and that sort of hardens you and creates calluses and it dents you as well. And so they're at both very different sort of stages in their, I guess, like mental development and their emotional development. And so seeing them sort of, you know, like he's got this great understanding of her and this great gentleness about,
yes,
you know, it's like he's handling this prickly ball that you know, it's hurting his hands, but he's like, it's okay, it's all right, you know, these will soften. And
I felt that while reading.
And she's like, she's got her prickles out because she doesn't want anything to get too close to her, you know. And he's like, it's okay, it's all right, you know. So you'll be okay. But he also knows that she's got to work through that herself. Like, he's not going to force her through it, you know. He's not going to manhandle her through this trauma that she's got to work through. Like, he understands how that pain sort of resonates, and you know. So it's a bit exploring their relationship has been, I guess, very, I guess, healing for me. And especially with, you know, I went through a lot of, I guess, traumas with, especially during while I was writing STEM. It was very hard for me, you know, that 3 months where I was, again, just tucked down here. And I was dealing with, like, bringing up a lot, you know, to write this story. And I remember just breaking down in the shower with my husband and just bursting into tears. And I was like, I can't do this. And he said, I've got this. Like, I will, you know, he brought in his mom. And because I was at that stage, I was, you know, I was still taking the kids to school and stuff. And it was prior to 3 months before. So it was, you know, I was dealing with the three kids while also full-time riding. And I was just burnt both ends. You know, people pleaser to the T, like just trying to do everything and not doing everything. And he just sort of, you know, he said, I've got this, I'll sort you out. Brought his mum in, had her looking after the kids. He started working from home 2 days a week, and I was able to just do what I needed to do. And then it wasn't until after Flame, he said to me, look, I feel like I need to be home helping you full time. So he left work, he left his career that he'd been, you know, studying for years.
Wow.
And as a corporate lawyer, and he came home and he became the primary caregiver of our kids. And I said to him, I need to write a different story. And that's where Moon came from. So I think that had I'd written, because I'd had the story in my head for the past 3 years, 4 years now, but I think had I written the story earlier, you know, prior to us going as a couple, going through all that development, I don't think Calm would have come out the same way. And as he did. Wow. I think a lot of that, you know, the understanding, that emotional understanding of handling, you know, your partner, even when she's prickly and feeling like she's, you know, needs to bind into herself. I think that a lot of that came through from what we were going through as a couple at that time.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And it makes sense in terms of the timing and how that all came together.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was really a no accident, you know, and how, gosh, wow. So he, as a corporate lawyer, you know, left his job so that he can come help support you.
Yeah.
I think that's so lovely. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. It literally felt like, and I think I wrote this in my end words at in Moon, but it felt a bit like that scene in Game of Thrones where it seems the Battle of the Bastards, and he's, you know, he's there and he's like seeing this huge army just coming to him, and he's like, oh, all right, here we go. And then they're just about to hit him, and then this army just, whoom, you know, like, that's how it felt for me. That's how it felt for me. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh. And I can't imagine. So yeah, being home with three kiddos while writing such an emotionally driven, I mean, just so much trauma into Bleed a Crystal Bloom, and like having to be in that mind space, you know, and being down to the wire like that. I mean, it sounds like there were a lot of variables there that you had to work through.
Juggle. It was a juggle. It was an absolute juggle, but we got there. We got there. And you've got to go through these hard times sometimes. You've got to, you know, create those calluses to really, you know, and to know how you work more comfortably. I think now I know my limits, and I know my boundaries, and I know how I work well. And I you know, that's what I rely on now you know, stay true to myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Yeah, I was thinking about, okay, and it's Calm. How do you pronounce it? Because I think sometimes it might, Khan.
Everyone's got a different, you know, accent, but yeah, Khan.
I know.
Yeah.
I sounded so weird saying that. I'm like,
Khan. No, you're right. You're fine. It's just my New Zealand / Kiwi accent.
And I so don't have that. But anyway, that relational dynamic between him and Rave, and how, and I just so picked up on that of like how, like, you know, I can see that imagery of like him cushioning her, you know, and not being aggressive or like forcing her to see whatever, you know, and meeting her where she's at, which I think is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, yes, that she, I mean, obviously her story and all the trauma that went through at that point in their lives or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she lived a whole bunch of, like what you were saying, like the time or whatever, yeah, like she lived.
There's a whole chapter of life. A whole chapter that we'll be exploring in this next book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering when that will be explored and when maybe there might be some vulnerability there.
There's definitely some vulnerability in book two. So it's coming.
And then it's so interesting, like Orlaith and Rorden. Royden? Am I saying that?
Yeah,
right?
Royden, yeah.
Yeah. That dynamic is so different.
Oh, yes.
And so many plot twists there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, how was it very like intentional writing these relational dynamics for you? Like, or was it just sort of based on where the characters, where it was kind of taking you with the plot? Do you know what I'm saying? Because they're very different.
I sketch out a plot, but I don't pre-sketch out like the psychological development, you know. And I guess one thing I let happen organically is how I guess these mentalities are bouncing against each other, and how the psychological flourish. I don't pre-plan that, you know. I have specific scenes in mind and how, like, you know, but I allow them to, like, if they're developing in a certain way and I have to take that elsewhere, that's what I do. And I've actually had to deal with that quite a bit with book two, because I've had to, again, listen to the characters. I definitely, you know, again, it's very much just listening to the characters. I plan to the point, I plan as much as I can, but then I've also got to be open to shifting, because again, like, it's if my character's telling me that they need something different, then I have to listen to them. I can't go, well, no. You know, I very much, I kneel to them as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And, you know, I know that we've like talked about this several times, but the piece of trauma for these characters and how they've shaped them and how it's important to you to like understand where the characters have been, where they're going, their motivations. And did you have to do any research into like the psychology behind trauma? I was just curious. No. Or did it just feel natural? Like, you were just like, I'm going to get into this headspace.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm just going to dig deep. I'm going to do some digging. I'm going to crack open that icy shell and go deep. pull up a monster. I don't think it would harm to do more research or, you know, that sort of thing, but I definitely haven't felt the need to yet, so
yeah,
it might come though.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, what's that phrase? Like, don't fix it if it ain't broken.
Yeah. I think my characters can't research. They're not out there researching their mentality, you know? So I'm like, oh, well, this keeps it organic. It's like, we all make mistakes as well. Yes. And I think that I love having my characters make mistakes. You know, I think that that's very real life. We've all done that. We're all,
so real.
We all wear our wounds. So it's, you know, I don't shy away from, you know, I'm not out here trying to make them look perfect. I think I love a broken character who's been through some SHIT and has come out the other side, you know, with their dents and hardened and just, you know, and also more capable of being vulnerable. You know, I'm definitely now more capable of being vulnerable than I was, you know, when I was younger, when I was going through things. So, it's, you know, that's very real. And, I just battle through that with them.
Yeah. Well, and you said earlier too, that it can feel healing for you as well as you're writing these stories, right?
Like, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's incredible. And you were also saying earlier that you try to like separate a little bit from your characters. I was going to ask you if you identify more with a character, like any of your characters, or if it's,
I think if any of them, it would definitely, Orlaith with her, her very naturey sort of side of her. Mm-hmm. That's
me. I love that side of her. Yes.
Yeah. I identify with Rave and the side of her that has this connection with animals and stuff, because that is very, that is very me. I also identify with Rave in the way that she shoves everything down and then has this kind of sarcastic, witty way about her. Like, that's my communication language is just, you know, kind of keeping everything up here and, you know, stuffing everything down. So I think again there's a little bit of everybody, I think, there.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of me and everybody, but I think probably if I was to pick one, I would say that the easiest one for me to write is Rave. So I think that she's probably most I guess, although I'm not going around wearing blades.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, she is such a badass. I love her.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to reading her book too.
I cannot wait. And then I was also going to say, this is really random. One of my favorite side characters, well, I don't know. I think he's like a integral. I feel like he's a big part of the story, but with Tablita Crystal Bloom Kai, I love him so much. Mm,
yes, I love writing Kai. I could write Zyke, but for the rest of my life, he is so fun to write. There've definitely been some of my favorite chapters to write. I just get in there and I have a lot of fun. So, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, he's a joy.
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to ask too, I read somewhere, I think in the back of one of the books, that Tablita Crystal Bloom came to you in a dream.
The very first chapter did, yes. So I woke up and I was like, oh my golly. And I just started jotting down ideas. And I think, you know, about 3 days or something, I had the entire, you know, storyline sort of jotted out and started writing almost immediately. So very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it happens.
I think
like
it
that.
Is really cool. Yeah. But it sounds like when the moon hatched, though, that was something that like that story has been around in your brain for a while. Like
the world
around.
Specifically. Yeah. I saw the world about 3-4 years ago now. So I knew I could see that. And I also knew certain scenes, like for instance, the one with, and I'm not going to do spoilers, but where Rave is showing something that Khan has been working on. For many, many phases. Yeah, that. So I had that scene in my head. So there's certain scenes that I knew, you know, but there was other things I had needed to nail down. So I did actually try to write the story twice before I wrote it the third time and did it right. But it wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. It wasn't going to get me to that point that I needed it to get me to. So I scrapped about, you know, 2 35,000 word drafts. So that's right. Sometimes you got to write it wrong to write it right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So like family dynamics growing up, like being raised on a farm and having, you know, living in your imagination and having all these stories in your mind. Did you actually write them down then? Yeah. Like you like wrote them out.
And no. Oh, okay. Oh. I know. I would lay in bed at night and I'd be telling a story in my head and every night when I'd go lay down to go to sleep, I would start off where I left off. So I would sort of tell myself a bedtime story that I was making up in my head every night. And I still do it to this day. Every night I go to bed and I'm going through a story in my head. So yeah, it's for now I write some of them. Uh-huh. Not all of them. Some of them just sit in my head. But yeah, that's kind of how I get to sleep at night.
Oh my gosh.
Which is funny.
So funny. And did you talk to your parents, your family? I mean, did they know that you had this rich imaginative world in your brain? Do they know this about you?
Imagination is kind of thick in the family. My mum is very, very creative and she's got a very rich imagination. My nana is very creative and had a very rich imagination. And it's kind of, there's this very thick vein of it that I think one of the reasons why my mum, myself and my nana had such this beautiful bond and, you know, and why I think even just talking about my nana hurts is because a lot of who I am came from her and, you know, and was fed down through my mum to me. And, you know, I feel it feels very like generation, you know, it's got generations of creativity has been poured into that. And they knew that I was creative. I draw, I paint, I do all sorts of things. So it's sort of, you know, anything creative I pick up, I'm away with it. I love creativity in general. It's like it's my language. If there's anything, three things I need in this world, it's, you know, creativity is the one thing. Like, and the interesting, that's the main thing, you know, so that would be a bit of sunshine here and there probably, which I don't always get because I'm usually tucked away at the moment, but, and can't really think of a third one. Oh, family, of course. Of course. of course. You know, I think this, like, it's interesting because with all the creative things that I've done over my life, and there's been a lot, like, all sorts of creative things. Writing is the only one that is completely satisfied that need that I have, that itch that itches at me if I'm not doing something creative. Like writing is the only thing that has kept that itch away completely. So I don't have an itch to craft. I don't have an itch to sit down and paint. I don't have an itch to, you know, do anything else. Writing gives me everything I need. And that is, I think, how I knew when I actually said, I'm going to try this. That's how I knew it was right, because there was no pull anywhere. My head wasn't being turned anywhere towards any my craft station or anything else. You know, it was like, this is it. Yeah.
This is it.
I found my space. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I think it's interesting too. Earlier you were saying that, you know, in childhood, having this rich imaginative world or whatever, and having all of these stories in your mind that I think it's really powerful asking yourself, like, what your dream was, you know, in childhood. Yeah. And you're living out that dream as an adult. I don't know. I just think that that's really interesting too, with personality development and all the things. But I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I think I was always supposed to do something that was kind of isolate. You know, I think I've lived again a lot of everything has been in my own head, you know, growing up. And so it's kind of makes a lot of sense that I've tried other things that involve being around a lot more people and stuff, but this is very much me, you know, and I think it was just always meant to be. I think everything was just slowly working its way towards this. So,
That's so cool. And that feeling of like creativity that it's, you know, it's the writing fully like scratches that itch. I can feel that. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Do you have brothers or sisters growing up?
Like, yes, I've got an older brother, and I've also got two younger brothers. So my older brother is 3 years older than me. And then mum and dad went back for 2 more and had my younger brother 10 years younger. And then my other younger brother's like 12, almost 13 years younger. So yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah. So I'm the only girl and surrounded by boys. Then I've got a boy and two girls, so
are they in New Zealand still, or are they in Australia?
So my two of them are in New Zealand still, my oldest one and my youngest one. But my brother, who's third youngest, he actually lives with us at the moment, so with his girlfriend. So they just moved over here from New Zealand, so which is really, really cool.
It seems like family is really important to you.
It is, you know, very much so.
And I think this is kind of random too. I'm like jumping around, but when you were mentioning some of the journal entries in Moon, of like, and then when I mentioned that feeling of like tenderness with the family dynamic there, I wonder if you've experienced that yourself, you know, of like some of that tender family connection.
Oh, very much so.
It's
I mean, I go back to New Zealand, you know, I used to at least about 3 or 4 times a year. Obviously, it's been a bit trickier this past year. And then when COVID hit and stuff, you know, it was harder to get over there. But
so hard.
But I mean, after COVID, after everything opened up, I was over there for, I think, 2 months straight. You know, like I just head over there with the kids and during the school holidays, and or I head over there by myself and Josh looks after the kids, and or I head over there with one and then the next and then the next. So we're constantly backwards and forwards. I'm bringing my mum and dad over on a boat because my mum doesn't fly for a couple of months at the end of the year. So. Nice. It's very, very important. And, you know, I've loved a lot, I've lost a lot. It really does all boil down to family and putting that effort in. And
that's cool. You brought up COVID, like, this is so random. Were you writing anything during COVID? Was that during that time of, part of what was going on?
I think I was writing Bloom at that time.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. It was STEM.
I think I was about to ask you STEM.
I think it was. I think because it was, because my husband had to come home and work from home for a bit. And we lived in this really tiny house at that time, and it was full of mold, and we had no windows, no like light coming in, and no backyard for the kids. And the kids were very young, and everyone kept getting sick, and it was a very, very tough time. You know, like we were all very closed in and mm-hmm. and trying to thrive despite it, and mm-hmm. it was rough, you know, and. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just after COVID that we brought our home, and then we've got a huge big park just across the road, and the kids, nice. it was like giving them a breath to help them uh-huh. flutter from the nest, and now they've just got mm-hmm. all the space, and we're all just, and that again here is where, you know, is where Moon came from. So it's yeah, mm-hmm. I think that was a tough time for everybody, yeah. wasn't it? It was rough.
Yeah, it was so rough. Yeah. I didn't know if that was another layer that you were talking about with to snap a silver stem with that piece where it was like so healing for you too, of yeah. like, you know, of I don't know, just like that kind of that breakdown a little bit of like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can get all of this done with like having three kids at home or whatever. I didn't yeah. know if that was during COVID.
I think it definitely Ooh. Fed into it, because I originally mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm going to get this done in 6 months. It stretched mm-hmm. out, you know, and I set the pre-order, which was there for a year mm-hmm. after. And I was actually going to release it earlier. And then, you know, with everything, it was just so hard, you know, it was so hard. Mm-hmm. And I was, again, three very little kids at home. And, just yeah, and I was in this very small space that wasn't very conducive to creativity, and mm-hmm. and my working space was actually in the lounge, so it was, you know, it was all very tight and dark, and yeah, so I think then that time just stretched out, and I was working nonstop, but it was just wasn't wow. coming out of me smoothly, you know. So mm-hmm. yeah,
a little bit slower process.
Yeah.
Sarah, I was wondering if I could do, if we could do like a rapid fire.
Yeah. Like some I'm not very rapid, but we'll see how we go.
That's okay. I'm not very rapid either. Okay. Are you in the headspace? You ready?
Yes. I'll try.
Okay. So Rorden or Khan?
I cannot say.
Oh, ouch. Oh no. Told you I'm not rapid.
No, it's okay. Don't be
for
rapid.
For me currently in my current headspace, how I am right now, mm-hmm. Khan.
Okay. Yeah. Favorite side character?
Oh. Kai.
Yeah.
Zycarp, yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay, and then which dragon do you feel like you would like
Moonflame? Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I'm a main flame girly.
Uh-huh. Me too. Yeah, I'm yeah. Okay, so Eluin or Orlaith?
Eluin.
Okay. And then which power would you choose? Ignos, Clode, Boulder, Rain?
Oh, That is hard. Because I think Clode is just so fun and spicy, and I love her. But Rain is like, there's some power there. Oh, God. I'm gonna go with the one that doesn't make me have to dig deep, because Rain is very, you got to dig deep, and I'm very, you know, so I'm going to go Clode, because that's just on point with my character.
I love it. Okay, in which world would you want to live in? Like between, because I haven't read that first series, but between To Bleed a Crystal Bloom or...
When the Moon Hatched world, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think I want my own moon plume. Let me in there.
Yes. And I'm sure with all the writing that you've been doing, it might be hard to have read, but any favorite reads so far this year?
Oh, I haven't been reading it all this year.
Okay.
But my recent favorite series was the Karamri Moaning series, the Fever series. So I was reading the last book in that series. I haven't actually finished it. I've put it aside because I'm trying to savor it. But yeah, so I was reading that towards the start of the year. So that's at least the closest that we've gotten. But no, you should see my TBR. You should see my physical TBR as well. Like it's hefty? Frightening, actually. Yeah, I just can't read while I'm working. So while I'm in this world, I need to really keep that space clean. But
Sure. That makes a ton of sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Coffee or tea?
Tea. Peppermint tea. Yeah.
Yum. Yeah. Okay. If you could be, this is a silly question, a fae, a witch, a vampire, a mermaid, who would you want to be?
Fae. Yeah. Definitely a fae. Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, fae are all different, you know, like fae can have wings. There's all sorts of fae. Uh-huh. Like it's like, you just, you know, that to me is so broad and I love, uh-huh. Yeah, definitely.
That's easy. Awesome. Yeah. Do you prefer mornings or evenings?
Evenings, I think. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I'm just about to mm-hmm. go to sleep. Yes. And I love crawling into bed, but also my brain is actually, it's most active in the evenings. Everything comes a lot easier mm-hmm. for me. So I write my best stuff in the evenings.
Cool.
For that 1 hour of power that I've got after dinner. Uh-huh. It's a good hour of power. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, that was all of the rapid fire questions that I had.
That was rapid enough.
That was going to be much shorter. But I wanted to ask too before we start to wrap up. Some of the scenes, there are some spicy scenes. Hmm. How does it feel writing those spicy scenes?
I never put spice in for the sake of spice. So for me, it always feels like a natural progression of the relationship. So like when I get there, I'm like, I'm ready for that to happen. You know, like it's, and I'm like so excited to get in there and write that. Yeah. Because it's usually, I love slow burn. So usually it's been building up for a while. So no, it's always, you know, I'm ready for that to happen when that happens. I have to be in a certain headspace for it though, and they do take me longer to write than I guess in other scenes, just because you've kind of got to go to a different sort of headspace for it, and you know, there's a lot you got to think about and body positions and all sorts of things. So it's you know, you've got to really but no, I love writing those scenes. I'm always, you know, I don't like to shy away from those scenes because I feel like, I use them as another layer of developing the emotional connection and and the characters in general. So it's, I think that, for the stories that I write, they are important, I feel, but
No, that sounds pretty on brand for you to not shy away from it. Like you've really, I mean, you really put yourself into the characters. Obviously we've talked about this and the emotional like progression and range, and it makes sense that for you, like it is a progression of the like character arc and development and part of the development of the story. So maybe one last question, any like future plans that you can share with everyone? Or I know we all know book two is coming out in October 2025. Yes. You were saying a fourth book of Crystal Bloom maybe coming out before then, possibly.
Hopefully.
Any other projects or anything
No,
else?
Well, okay, none that I can talk about.
Dang it.
That's all right. Okay.
I thought I'd try.
No, I love that.
Awesome. Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for taking the time to
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's been so fantastic, and it's been a joy, and I really, thank you for taking the time to interview me.
Yes, any day, like anytime, Sarah. Like I would love to talk with you, and I will say I feel like that is something that like on Instagram you're so accessible to readers, and I think that that's so wonderful. Like all my friends. Yeah, like my Bookstagram friends, they're like, oh my gosh, Sarah Parker is so kind and just so receptive and accessible to us. And I don't know, I just think that's so cool.
I feel like, so especially when I'm not deep in my writing cave, I try my best to be as accessible as possible. It's a lot harder when I'm like right now, I feel terrible because I'm so behind in all my messages and everything. And I just can't, if I go in there, I'm in there for hours, you know, responding and whatnot. So at the moment I've got to kind of pull back and I feel terrible because I want to be there. I want to be accessible. But certainly when I've done with the project and I'm breathing again, I wouldn't be here without you all, literally. Like I would not be
like,
here
literally.
Exactly. It's like you all make us, you know, you all literally do. It's like there's just no way that I could have continued operating, you know, as the, you know, without also being a full-time parent and doing all that on my own, but without all the support of all my readers, you know, I was able to have Josh here helping me, and that's enabled me to then be writing more stories. And literally, I would not be doing this without you all. So it's, you know, it's the very, very least I can do.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. Well, on behalf of all the readers, thank you so much for being you and for like sharing your art with the world and your stories. I'm so thankful that you have shared your stories with the world and not just keeping them in your head or scattering them to the wind.
I'm so
thankful.
I shall keep doing it.
Yes. Actually, I always do this, but can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
What inspired me?
Knee just kind of fluttered on into my head. I don't even know. Like, she's just, oh, she's just my favorite. Yeah, I love Knee.
Yeah.
I love Knee.
Yeah.
You see Knee again in book two.
I was wondering.
Yeah, me too.
Also, last, before we wrap up, just shout out. I got this shirt from Callie.
Oh, I was going to say, Maddie, I thought Designs. I recognized that. Very cool.
Yes.
I love it. Beautiful.
I think you have it licensed and it, I don't know if you can read it, but Chase Death,
Moonbeam.
Yeah, very cool.
One of I love
favorite
it.
Favorite quotes. So anyway, I wanted to show you.
I love it.
Well, thank you. And everyone, you can find her books at any like major book retailer online. All the places, all the things. We know where to find you. Our listeners know where to find you. I don't need to share this. But obviously you're on Instagram. Are you on TikTok too?
I am, but honestly, I'm never on there. I you just never know what you're going to see, you know? So I just, I certainly don't scroll on there. I do jump on there, especially when I'm not writing. Like at the moment, I don't think I've logged on there for about 3 weeks, but you know, I'm here. I'm most easy to find on Instagram. So
yeah.
But if you share a story and you tag me in the story, I'll generally see it.
Hopefully. Yeah, I know. And there have been a couple times I think early on when I first joined Bookstagram, that world, whatever, I was like, oh my gosh, Sarah A. Parker just shared my story or just responded to me in a message. And then my husband, I mean, actually, truly, you are the reason why I started this podcast. My husband
Gosh. What?
Like, I'm not even kidding. He was like,
I love that.
Why not just start a podcast and interview all your favorite authors? I'm like, can I do that? Well, I'm going to try.
I love
and
that.
My big goal was to have you on this. And here you are.
That is so cool. Ah, my heart feels, love that so much. That is awesome.
Yes.
Made my week.
Oh, good. Of course. Well, thank you so much, Sarah.
My absolute pleasure.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode with Sarah A. Parker. It was a dream come true. It was an honor and a joy to talk with her. And she is the inspiration for this podcast. So thank you so much, Sarah A. Parker, for taking the time to connect. It was phenomenal, and I loved talking with her more about her books, her characters, her writing process, all the things. Also seeing the Fairy Loot special edition of When the Moon Hatched. Oh my word, I cannot wait to get that. And guys, also learning that To Bleed a Crystal Bloom, the next book, will be released before When the Moon Hatched book two, coming in October 2025. So we can be on the lookout for that. You guys can find her information. Well, you can find her on Instagram. And you can find all of her books at any major book retailer. You could order it through your indie bookstore or local library or Amazon. So thank you guys so much for being here and for supporting and promoting authors who write fanciful stories that make my heart sing. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Romanticized Library. There are many more episodes to come with amazing authors, as well as deep dives into various writing processes, general life conversations, some spicy spice, mental health discussions, favorite tropes, and many tangents. If you're feeling generous, please feel free to leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much for being here and for helping celebrate these amazing authors. See you next week.